Good day, everyone, and welcome to Indie Mixtape. My name is Ty, and joining me today is my lovely co-host, HB. How's it going, HB?
It's going great.
Hell yeah. You know, we're just going to hop right into it. This week,
yeah.
We played a lovely game together called Before the Green Moon, which is a little community science fiction farming simulator that's set at the base of a space elevator, and you kind of start the game in the days leading up to your community's departure to the moon.
It's not that your community is leaving. You're leaving.
Oh, it's you. You are leaving, yeah.
You are, specifically. This one's my turn follow, and in this one, you are specifically like a farmer who's just freshly moved into this community, Stardew Valley style, and you're given, in classic Stardew Valley style, an abandoned farmstead. And the reason you do
this... Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a farming sim if you weren't given an abandoned farm.
Yeah. It's important to say that this farm is very abandoned. It's kind of cute, but also very abandoned.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to abandoned, it's like probably an 8 or a 9, I would say.
Yeah. It's like, it still, like, works. There's still, like, a lot of stuff there. There's, like, an old hoe in there, like an ancient watering can, that kind of thing. But it is busted.
Yeah, it's rough around the edges, for sure.
What's also rough around the edges is this town, because it is, well, not to put too fine a point on it, it's somewhere between a farming cooperative and a company town.
Yeah.
The vibes aren't great. When you operate your farm, you start out just getting, like, company mailed seeds to you, where you're just like, I think it's, like, literally called space corn, right? You just kind of...
Yeah.
Was it, like, some kind of rice, or... It was something like
it's some
that.
Kind of, it's some grain. Kind of grain, or something.
Yeah. Space grain.
Space grain.
Yeah. And, the reason you're doing this is because you don't want to live in... You didn't come here because you wanted to live in the company town. You came here because you want to live on the moon. Because, well, there's some problems with the planet. It's kind of dying. It's not great down here.
You know, as it goes.
Yeah.
Sometimes planets be depleted.
Yeah, it just happens sometimes. So people, you know, they've terraformed the moon. They can't quite terraform the planet, but they can terraform the moon, and they've done that. So now, if you have money, you're going to the moon, because that's where all the action is. And that's where you're going to. But unfortunately, to get to the moon, you need to pay a lot of money for a ticket. And because you don't have, like, you know, any other things to do, you have to make that money the hard way by farming.
Yeah, you have to be a person of the earth and grow crops with your little shovel. I really like that. This is not, like, fully related to what we're talking about, but I really like the, like, 3D-ish art style and, like, the little animations when you're doing your stuff. You get, like, you do your little hoe and it's just, like, a perfect little hole. It's very cute.
Yeah, this game is so cute and it's such, like, a beautiful art style. It's fairly simple. I've heard it described, like, once or twice, but, like, as, like, a dying N64 game, and that's, like, pretty on the money.
Yeah. I could say that. It's a little more, like, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Like round. Do you know what I mean?
It's kind of lumpy. There's a lot of, like, I like the tones that this game plays with. There's, like, a lot of, like, kind of sickly greens, a lot of, like, autumnal browns, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it has the, like, kind of 3D claymation-ish kind of animation, almost.
Yeah.
Everything is, like, a little chunky and a little, like... Also, the people kind of look like little, like, Miis from the Wii, but, like, with more details.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like Animal Crossing, except everybody's a human.
Yeah.
There's no, like, animal people as such. You're just all these little me-looking dudes trying to make the best in a cyberpunk future.
Sphere hands, yeah. Little sphere hands, little sphere feet. It's very cute.
Yeah. And, I mean, And I mean, at first, it's like a very... at first, it's very cute and fairly simple. Like, the actual farming in this game is, yeah, you dig, like, a furrow in the ground, you plant, you know, some space corn that you got in the mail, and then the rain, because it's the wet, because you start out in the wet season, the rain waters everything, and then you harvest it later. And that's mostly it. I think there's also, like, weeding, there's, like, a bunch of other things you have to do, but for the most part, the plants kind of grow themselves. There isn't a, it's not that difficult. Of course, space corn doesn't really pay well, so you have to, as the game goes on, you just kind of have to start getting into a series of different hustles.
Yeah, like in real life.
Yeah. Like, you need to get, first of all, you need to diversify your crops, because the other ones pay more, but, you know, the company doesn't give them to you for free to, you know, sell money. To buy at a very favorable rate back from you. You need to, like, get new tools, you need to dig up more of your farm, you know, you have to... You can get into a wide variety of things, including, like, treasure hunting and similar things. And, yeah. But to do all that, of course, you need, like, a lot of energy, which is something I really kind of enjoyed about this game. I know Stardew Valley works in a similar way, but I haven't played a lot of Stardew Valley. So here it just felt kind of good, how you just have a bunch of energy and you spend all morning working on your crops and then go into town in the afternoon because your energy's out.
Yeah. It is very similar to Stardew and, like, how the energy works. And it's kind of fun to have the, like, yeah, the idea of, like, you can't just go forever without resting. Like, you are a person.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty standard in that way. So you go into town because your energy's low. And then you start, you know, you get lunch, which gets your energy back up. You relax, you have a nice little time with the townies, you go and find some stuff that you can maybe sell at the store later. And that kind of is the real meat of the game, in a serious way. So, the town you're in is kind of this, is, like we mentioned, the company town. It's formed around the spaceport, which is where people just kind of filter in and out in transit, but there's also a couple of people who just live here. And you're one of them for now. And many of them have hopes of getting on the ship, but many of them have just kind of given up on that ambition or just, you know, want to stay here because they go, like, you know, it's not great, but it's a community.
Yeah, I mean, better than nothing.
Yeah, it's better than... That's kind of one of the things I really love about the protagonist of this, where they come into the town, and your protagonist does talk in cutscenes sometimes, but they're kind of, you know, a person of few words generally. But one of the things they definitively say, for example, is that... some of them go like, oh, you're like working really hard on your farm, and your protagonist will answer, oh, I was in the Young Farmers, this is nothing compared to that. And the Young Farmers is like, it's not fully explained what that is, but it seems to be like a child labor program for farms which work to the bone and the wastes.
Yeah, the thing about that too is like, I feel like that's such a like, a cultural thing, right? Because I hear Young Farmers, and I immediately was like, oh, they were in, like, 4-H. Which is, like... Are you familiar with 4-H?
I'm not. Tell me more about
it. Okay, I don't know what it stands for. It's literally, like, 4-H's. But it's, like, a group in America that, like, I think is still around that used to teach kids, like, about farming and, like, raising animals and stuff like that. So, like, we have that kind of shit here. Not to say that we're not dystopian and wild, but, like, that's immediately, I was like, oh, they were, like, taking pigs to the state fair and shit. Like...
Yeah. I mean, it could also be that. I feel like it's a bit of both, you know? Because, like, the protagonist specifically says, oh, yeah, that was very hard being in the Young Farmers.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, there's a lot of, your protagonist is, like, the protagonist is a very particular vibe of, you know, I'm sort of hanging out with all these people, but I am, in my heart, harder than all of them. Because most of the people in this town are, you know, you become friends with them, but you always, but there's always this sort of sense of, when you're interacting with them, is that, you know, I'm just gonna get my ticket and get out of here eventually.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird balancing act, since, like, you're not planning to stay.
Yeah. You kind of, as the game goes on, you become, like, less and less of a stranger. You understand what's going on with all these people, what their little intrigues are, what are the things they're interested in and worried about, and so forth. You even, like, start dating one of them, if you want to. There's people who go, oh, you're such a wonderful addition to the community. We really do hope you stay. And you're like, yeah, you know.
You're like, uh-huh.
I mean, it's a cute town. But this is one of the interesting things about this game, where you can't just stay in the town indefinitely, and you can just keep doing the farming sim stuff, and, you know, once you have your ticket, but there isn't, like, an end to it. You just kind of keep talking to people, keep doing your routine, and you can keep going, but at a certain point, you are going to have to leave.
Yeah, that is the goal, ultimately, is to get the frickin' heck out of there.
Yeah, and that's what lends the whole game this sort of really funny, melancholy vibe. Like this is a lot like White Ocean, Big Jacket in a lot of ways, and that it's kind of funny, kind of cute, and kind of sad all at the same time. There's just sort of a sense of peace about it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a great vibe to combine with the sort of dystopia this game takes place in.
Yeah, I really liked just, like, kind of walking around, vibing.
Yeah, they get the seasons so right in this. Like, it just feels good to be in this town. There's, like, this was also true of White Ocean, Big Jacket, where I'm, like, looking at how they did the raids in that game, and I'm like, wow. They got it right. This is like a few polygons, but I'm looking at them feeling things. And this game is much the same way. The landscapes are just dead on great.
Yeah, there's a lot of just... We already talked about the color palette, but yeah, it's a lot of just like very muted, kind of not pretty colors.
Yeah, but that makes it feel better in a weird way. Like, it feels like towns that I have been in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, listen, a lot of places in the world aren't that pretty.
Yeah. But that makes them...
That makes them just nice and real.
This is something that I like about the places that I live, where I don't really like going to beautiful places so much as I like going to, going to places that aren't that beautiful, because they feel nicer to be in. They feel like a place that I can fit in better, and this is also true of the town in this game.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree.
It's not breathtaking, it's breathable, you know?
Yeah. It's just, like, a place where anyone could just, like, be.
Mm-hmm. You could just go inside the drain pipe and go in the underground and explore the weird tunnels under the town, but there's nothing that cool in there. There's no great mystery for you to unravel in this town.
There's no dark secret of the town.
Yeah. All the darkness is right out in the open.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And it's one of those things where... You look at this town, and of course your character is a fucking beast who can just farm their way out of poverty, unlike most people. Like, you're gonna go out in the woods, you're gonna get those chicken eggs, and you're gonna harvest, like, two 20 ground apples so you can feed all your chickens throughout all the season the ground apples don't appear. And then you're gonna get a lot of chicken eggs, and then you're gonna sell those for an incredible amount of money. Especially once those chickens start laying some really good eggs, you know? Like those quality eggs, I think they're called, or something. So yeah, there's just it's like an environment where it's super rewarding to figure out the hustle.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else really more to say about Before the Green Moon.
Yeah, it's just a great game.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just a nice time.
Yeah. It's a nice, vaguely sad time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're also not that broken up about it. It is what it is.
Yeah, listen, that's life, baby. And your character knows it.
Yeah.
HP, what's your first game?
Well, I'm about to talk about a little game that I like to call Darkwood. That's also what everybody else likes to call it. It's a 2017 survival game by Acid Wizard Studio. So.
That's this killer studio name.
It's a killer studio name. Anyway. In Darkwood, you play a doctor who's having a really bad time in backwoods Poland, where a mysterious plague and associated arboreal disaster has basically cut you off from the rest of the country. And when I say arboreal disaster, I mean the trees are growing, like, real tall and thick and really problematic.
Oh.
They're cutting houses in half. There's also, like, all sorts of evil fungus growing. It's not great.
What makes the fungus evil?
It grows in you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Also, it's poisonous. If you step on it, it's not great for you.
That's not great.
But good question, yeah. Also, people are really mad at you for failing to get a handle on a plague that is turning people into horrible monsters. That's also an important thing that's going on. So, being a doctor and a man of science, you do the only sensible thing, which is you capture a guy who's passed out on your property, and you inject him with some evil juice that you've harvested from, like, all the fungus and flora and fauna that's, like, hanging out around here. You do this against his will, obviously. He's kind of passed out, and it's just not a great scene. And, yeah, afterwards, there is a problem, though, because this doesn't exactly work out for you. Because make a long story short, a series of unfortunate events happens, and the guy just kind of eventually escapes. And the rest of the game, you play that guy that just escaped.
What was the evil juice supposed to do?
Unclear. But I will tell you what it does.
That just seems like a bad idea.
You'd think so, but actually, the evil juice does give you mutated powers.
Well, obviously.
Yeah. You know what they say, whenever there's like an evil thing going on out there, you inject it into yourselves, or better yet, into other people.
Yeah, I watched Arcane. I know.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, as you play this guy, the problem is that the doctor has stolen your key that you used to get in here, and you need to get it back from him. And you need to get out there, ideally kill the doctor, get that key back, and escape from this place. You know, simple thing. However, there's several problems. The first is that the animals don't like you, the people don't really like you either, and nighttime is certain death for you out of doors. So what you kind of have to do in this game is you explore all day, and then you stay in your hideout all night. And it's in the style of something like Don't Starve, basically. And during the day, you're making progress on, like, you know, you're foraging, you're fighting things, you're making progress on finding a way out of this place. And of course, in survival game style, you kind of loot everything. You loot everything you find, you fight everything that wants to kill you, and you craft various things that help you with that, like boards with nails in them, so that you can fight off adversaries. And when I say craft, this isn't, like, good stuff. Like I said, it's like boards with nails, this is like an improvised Molotov cocktail, this is a very advanced weapon that you're gonna be very happy to get your hands on, a shovel. And and complicating all of this is that, as I mentioned, you've been injected with some evil juice, which has made you into, not to put too fine a point on it, a total freak. And one of the things that's happened is that you just can't actually die normally anymore, for as far as I can tell. And if something adverse were to happen to you, like, say, an elk just absolutely fucking destroys your shit, you're just gonna wake back up in your hideout a little bit later. So kind of a Bloodborne thing going on, you know, fear the old blood and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep finding more and more strange stuff to distill into more evil juice to inject yourself with. And you increasingly develop more and more supernatural abilities, like
you're
healing
just free
from electric light.
Evil juice.
You're freebasing evil juice. Exactly correct, Ty. So, the upside of this is that very much like Bloodborne and very much unlike Don't Starve, the game is actually, like, really forgiving if you make missteps. If you die, all you really lose is that your backpack just kind of falls off you and you have to go find it again. And those generally stay in place where you died. It's not like animals come and eat all your all the meat you had in there or something.
That's kind of surprising, honestly.
Yeah. The game says it's unforgiving. It's lying. That's just kayfabe. That's just them doing, like, a little Dark Souls-y thing where it's like...
That's just them doing, like, marketing.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not actually mortal as such, so the question is, where does the tension come from? Well, as you might expect, several places. First of all, this game has some incredible sound design. There's, like, because there's, like, fungus to play with, there's trees, there's forest sounds, there's, like, dilapidated Polish farmsteads and that sort of thing. You have a lot of, like, very fantastically squelchy organic soundscapes. You have, like, the little horror sounds of, like, doors opening up in the distance. And you have all the various warning signals that all the animals that hate you give you. Like, for example, a dog barks at you from the distance, or, like, an elk starts making horrible elk noises. And the game is played top-down, but even so, like, so the sound just does, like, a massive amount of work in setting the scene and, like, letting you know that, say, this particular farmstead you walked into might be extremely bad news just because of how oppressive it sounds in there. Like, really good, this game is really good at setting the tone through sound. And, you know, I spoke about the enemies. The interesting thing about the enemies in this game is that they're kind of benign a lot of the time. especially if you know how to avoid them, where, like, there's, like, dogs and infected guys around, and they just kind of growl at you or, like, wave a stick at you or do something like that and tell you to stay away. And it's only during, like, the night when they try to break into your house that they're, like, a huge problem for you. But, you know, when it is go time, they're out to fucking get you. They're a lot like, you know, when you run across them, they're some, like, nasty little neighbors that you develop over time. You just kind of put up with them for the most part. And you don't, there's not really that much benefit to killing them a lot of the time. And, of course, since you are, like, at best, like, wielding, like, a shovel or something against them, you're not exactly in a position to be making war on them a lot of the time.
Yeah, and, that tracks.
And this also comes together into a very interesting combat system where you're kind of rewarded for sort of moving carefully. You're dodging, you're weaving. You're like, one of the things that this game does is that you kind of have to wind up your attacks a lot of the time. And so you have to make ready, and only then you can swing. You can't just do a thing where you just, like, you swing your shovel wildly, or at least that's not the most effective way to do it. And yeah, you kind of have to dodge, weave, wait for your opening, like, follow a lot of environmental cues to survive in this game. And, you know, when you fail, A, it's, like, you know, not that much harm done, because if you die, you just kind of wake up later again. And the second thing is that when you do, like, step on a bear trap or something, it's not, like, it doesn't, like, ruin your life. It's just a situation where you step into it and go, like, ah, fuck, I should have seen that. Well, better, like, next time. And you're just kind of waiting for your opening a lot of the time in the combat, and you're just... Then it's interesting how methodical the combat system is, because this also goes... This rubs against the other thing the game is doing, which is you are kind of under time pressure, where you can explore from, like, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., you're kind of in your hideout trying your best not to die, but even if you die, that's fine. You still wake up in your hideout. It's just that the guy who comes into your hideout in the morning is like, if you survive, he goes like, well, that's great. I'm going to give you some extra stuff. If you die, then he's just like, yeah, you know, no harm done. I'd do the same in your place. And yeah, the bad vibes are just kind of surprisingly friendly as a result. You kind of go through all of this game and it's... And you just kind of get excited about all the interesting little guys you run into. Because it never feels personal. They don't want to kill you in particular. You're just sometimes in the wrong place at the wrong time. And over time, as you kind of master those cues, you learn to live in this horrible forest and, you know, later on other places. Until, of course, like in Before the Green Moon, you have to leave it all behind. Because, you know, even though you're a freak, you do have some standards. And this game has a main plot where you move from region to region, and over time you make friends, such as, you know, you can meet a cute dancer wolf who lick your face. He also eats people, but that's less important. You meet, like, a lady covered in chickens, you meet a guy who just has, like, so much sympathy that he, like, just sells you stuff in the morning when he comes to your hideout. I mentioned him already. There's a lot of, you know, other extremely fucked up guys that you might run into. They're all just kind of, there's even, like, you go to a village in this game, then that village is kind of funny, because they're just kind of living life out here. And you go in there, they look at you and go like, oh man, what happened to you? Stay away from me. I don't want to get the plague from you or something. People are just kind of rude to you a lot of the time.
I mean, there's also a guy on the bike. That seems kind of fair, honestly.
There's also, like, a guy on the bike. You can give him booze to run deliveries for you. Well, lots of great guys in this game. This game is freaky little guy central. It's an endless delight. And all told, you know, would go on holiday here again. Poland is beautiful. But yeah, I think that's the extent of what I have to say about Darkwood.
Hell yeah. I'm almost tempted to try it, but I really, really don't like survival games usually, so I'm like, kind of...
Yeah, I think the thing about Darkwood is that it looks like one game, but is actually another.
Mm-hmm.
Where it kind of has more of like a... it kind of has more of a horror action adventure game vibe. The survival elements are in there, but they're more to like contextualize what you're doing. You don't have to like eat or drink or do anything like that. You don't even actually sleep.
God.
Yeah. What the actual thing that you need to kind of worry about is gasoline, which powers your generator and keeps your lights on. But even that's like kind of easy to find because the devs patched it to make it easier to find. It's very forgiving and honestly a lot of fun, especially because of like how it kind of balances the horror, so that the horror is like exploratory in nature. You go into a new place and you go like, oh no, what now?
Yeah.
But because the stakes of the exploration are relatively low, it does do a great job of guiding you through itself. So it's very enjoyable in that respect, and I also don't really like survival games, but this one really scratched an itch. And I'm not just saying that because it's set in the Eastern Bloc, which is other than having a colon in your title, the surest path to my heart.
Yeah, fair. I'm gonna have to get to it at some point. So my first game is gonna be The Hayseed Knight from Maxi Molina, which is a animated and like pretty much fully voice acted visual novel, and it's done in like, people would probably describe it as like furry art style, like they're all anthropomorphic, like cartoony animal people. I just did an interview with Maxi, which will be on the feed probably before this episode comes out, actually, about that, and they like don't consider themselves really a furry, but they really enjoy like drawing cool, like, you know, fantastical characters. So that's kind of where the art style comes from. But it's also really cool because the main kind of species that are in the game are like deer and gazelles, and so there's this whole kind of queer narrative throughout about the main character having baggage around being attracted to a woman with horns, because, you know, in his culture only males have antlers, so it's seen as like gay, or like, you know, being attracted to transness to a degree. So there's like, yeah, there's a lot of really cool, interesting stuff in it. The writing is very fun, it's very funny. The art is really great. It's a cool, like, medieval kind of fantasy story. I've enjoyed it a lot. So yeah, I definitely super recommend it. It's cool, and there's, like, a lot of, like, different little secrets. Oh, and I'm forgetting the main thing, too. Like, the actual, like, device around it is that, like, you are seeing one of Adder, who's the main character's, like, ancestors, learning his story from someone who knew him. Because, like, all of the legends and stuff about how he became this great knight or whatever, according to him, are not accurate to who he was. So you're getting, like, this person's version of who Adder was. And it's just really neat. I like it. It's a good game.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say medieval fantasy, could you be more specific about that?
I will say, like, I would say Game of Thrones level fantasy.
Oh, like, there's zombies, but they're kind of elsewhere.
Or to a degree, or like, there's magic, but it's like not common, and a lot of people are like very fearful and suspicious of it, and like racist towards like the cultures that do it.
Oh man, glad we don't live in a world like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think I do love medieval fantasy now and again. Especially when it leans on medieval rather than fantasy.
Yeah, it's definitely, I would say it's definitely more like medieval, and it's nice because it has the more kind of casual tone, I feel, of like, I don't know if you're familiar with like T. Kingfisher, but like that style of fantasy novel that's a little more relaxed and a little less trying to be like Arthurian to a degree, do you know what I mean? Like in the way that it's trying to like speak and depict things, like it's about like a grubby little urchin and like a girl who works in a brothel and is supposed to grow up to be a princess. Like it's It's a lot of, like, characters and, like, a little short gay bard.
Something for everyone.
Something for everyone, truly.
Yeah. This sounds interesting. I've been on a real visual novel kick lately, so...
I love a visual novel.
Yeah. Visual novels are good.
They are, in fact, good. And you know what? I love my grown-up picture books.
Yeah. Listen. I've been getting into anime games specifically, and that's, I'm discovering a depth of appreciation for awful boys in my heart that I didn't know was there before.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard.
They're just the fucking worst, and I love them. The boys, that is.
Now we have to put you...
Pretty good.
I have to make, like, one of those axes of, like, what kind of horrible men slash boys you like, because there's, like, definitely different quadrants of that.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, mine is murderous, flamboyant gay men.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I was playing Amnesia Memories recently, and I did end up falling a little bit for a boy that poisons you and keeps you in the cage, so...
Okay, so we might be on the same page.
Yeah, I think we might be closer than we might think, so, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we have a podcast.
It's true. But yeah, it's a good, like, it's a love story, it's a story about, like, how history has changed in the telling. It's about, like, how younger people look back on their ancestors in a lot of ways, and, like, the expectations they hold them to. It's really good. I think it's a really good game. I liked it a lot.
The disappointing experience of having become a queer elder.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, this sounds great.
It's really good. Really, really recommend it. And also, like, definitely listen to the interview with Maxi when it's out on the feed, because it was a really cool conversation, and I think it gives a lot of context to, like, make the game even cooler.
Mm-hmm. Alright.
So, what is your next game, HB?
Well, I'd like to present a little game that I like to call Sluggish Morse, Pattern Circus. And there's a colon in there, if you couldn't tell.
I was gonna say, what does it say?
Pattern Circus.
Say the line.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a 2021 adventure game by Jack King Spooner, where and the best way to describe this premise, the premise of this game, is that you play a series of little guys, and in a future that's become very fleshy and moderately confusing, as people have learned to transcend the human form, and also to predict most kinds of future events. It's sort of a foundation thing. It's been described as, where people are like, people are just kind of figuring out what history is going to be like going forward. And, of course, this being the enlightened future, you'll play, you know, among other things, an investigator tasked to figure out the untimely death of a spaceship pilot, a funky little creature flipping the fuck out in the farm field, a scientist who's so completely bankrupt that they need to turn to a life of crime to feed their pet, a weird duck thing. Is how I would describe that character, fearing messages of terrible import across time and space. And finally, a little guy who dreams extremely important prophetic dreams, if not for the fact that he was suffering from insomnia. And, yeah, from that number of protagonists, you may sense that there is a kind of trouble here, which is that time in this game is getting a bit fucked up, and this is what the game calls a time expression, where this sort of predicted, known course of history is becoming increasingly muddled and twisting in on itself, where alternate realities begin to overlap. And this manifests as sort of an anomaly of time and space. And you will, and part of this game is that you'll be unpredictably switching between these characters. This game plays maybe one of my favorite interface tricks I've ever experienced. Because... in the start of the game, it tells you, oh, you can press this key to save. And it's true, that key does save your game, but it doesn't tell you is that whenever you save, it triggers the move to the next character in the storyline. You just kind of go from one to the next, and the first few times you do it, you're like, oh, fuck, what happened? And on top of this, and this is something that I maybe should have led with, is that the way that the also really confusing state of things is conveyed in this game is that it has a particular art style, which is a kind of do-it-yourself surrealist claymation hellscape.
Okay, wow, that's a lot of words.
Yeah. It's like, it's sort of like, Ty, have you ever played Hylix? Have we ever talked about Hylix before?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's a future episode topic. Anyway, it's kind of like Hylix, but it feels like a beast in its own right, because it's not just like claymation, it's also like a lot of very jagged, images, a lot of like deep fried JPEG aesthetics, that kind of thing. A lot of like very, a lot of very jagged montage is happening here, where it's also overlaid on, everything's overlaid together in very striking and very colorful and garish ways. And the interesting thing is that this means that a lot of the game is, like, very visually... It's sometimes visually, like, hard to parse what you're looking at exactly. This is in sharp contrast to how the music in this game works. It has a lot of extremely good and surprisingly useful music, because the music, more than anything else, kind of disambiguates where you are and what you're doing. Because all the characters have their own little musical styles, their own little motifs. A lot of sound design is playing through in how, a lot of the game is playing out and, like, using the music to guide you. And the result of this is that there's just a truly insane amount of music in this game, where a lot of screens have their own music as you go into a new place and talk to, like, one guy who tells some absolutely, absolutely strange things to you. There's a new musical track for that. You go into a house and the music is playing. You go into a house and, like, One of the places which has struck me is that I think it's like in one of the village sections where there's like a sort of mandolin-y track playing of like a conveying a pastoral vibe of sorts. It has like lyrics and everything and the narrative it's going through. You walk into a house that stops and you get like the interior house and you get the music of the interior house, which is different. Then you come back out and the song picks back up from where it stopped, which I don't think I've seen the game do before. And yeah, so the amount of music that this game has is also like very necessary in like the aesthetics that's laying down. And that really makes me understand why it was so difficult to make on top of like, you know, it came around the pandemic, it had a Kickstarter and everything. And as a result of, you know, it having been made in the pandemic, it's also kind of sort of unfinished. Where about half of this game was made overall, and the game was released as is because the production was just, you know, becoming untenable. It just couldn't be done anymore. But even in the unfinished state that I played it in, it's still a very remarkable game, and it doesn't really feel weaker despite being unfinished, because it kind of makes most of its point with the aesthetics. That's what I like about these surreal claymation games, is that simply from observing the vibes that they're laying down, you already understand what they're going for. That's a very powerful thing to me in a game. And yeah, as you may suspect from the fact that I name-dropped Hylix there, I'm just a really big fan of this type of game. I love claymation adventure games because there's just... Claymation is the best format for conveying just total confusion. And this game gets the feeling of the kind of future shock down perfectly. Because in this game, the future is here, we still don't have any money, and we need to go up to the asteroid of said Nokir to observe worms for divinatory omens in case time breaks again. And you know, none of us are happy about it, but that's simply what happened. Maybe the only people who are happy about it are the seers who dictated that all this should have happened. they even kind of seem happy about the fact that the whole thing is breaking down. And, which they seem to think is interesting. I probably need to replay this game a few times to get a full read on them. But yeah, it was overall an unforgettable job-seeking experience in the post-human non-future. So yeah.
That's cool. I'm intrigued by the music aspect of it, for sure.
Yeah, Jacking Spooner is like, you know, like, does a lot of like a lot of hand modeled stuff is in this game, but it's not like it's not necessarily striking in the way that it's like constructed, because like the models themselves are fairly simple, it's more the way that all of it comes together with the help of the music, because the music really sells it. But yeah, I think that's most of what I have to say about this one. It's not that long of a game. I finished it in an afternoon or so. It's like $8.
Yeah, that's definitely like kind of a steal, honestly.
Really pleased with that, to be honest with you. It's like I was worried it might be very long, but it wasn't. It just came in, it laid down the vibe, and it got out.
Hell yeah. Alright, well, my final game for today is a little game that you might have heard of, HB, called Balatro. I believe that's how you say it. I've never actually said it out loud before.
Balatro?
Balatro, Balatro, I don't know. I don't know what it's referencing, because I don't know anything about poker. So apologies in advance. So either Balatro or Balatro, I'm not sure. It just came out in February. It's from Local Thunk and published by Playstack. And it's a poker roguelike. So you build a deck to basically go through a small blind, a big blind, and then a boss blind in each ante. And then once you beat the boss blind, you move up to the next ante. And so basically, when you play your different poker hands, you get an amount of chips equal to the, like, numbers on your cards, plus, like, a multiplier of, you know, like, if it's a flush, you'll get, like, a certain multiplier. If it's straight, you'll get a certain multiplier. And then as you go through the game, you can get cards to level those up, and then you can also get Joker cards that will give you different effects. Like, say, if you play a straight, you'll get, like, plus 12 mults, I think is one of them. And some will add, like, more chips to your pot, so you automatically, like, start out with more when you're racking up points, stuff like that. So you're basically going through just, like, trying to build a deck based on the effects that your poker or your jokers have, and, you know, like, what suits you have, what numbers you have, all of that. And yeah, then to win, you have to beat 8 antes with a deck. And then after you do that, you unlock, like, an endless mode with that deck where you can just try to basically, like, chase a high score. And there are a ton of decks. Like, you get access to different ones for, like, just playing through with different decks, for winning on different difficulties, for, like, using different cards. So there's a lot to just, like, kind of mess around with and explore. A lot of stuff will just show up. Since you get booster packs of cards, things just kind of show up randomly, and then you unlock new jokers as you do different kind of, like, achievements or, like, meet different, like, qualifications. And so you get a lot of different options to do different builds, and it's very silly and very fun. I've only won once so far, but I have won, finally.
So I guess this addressed the question that I had about this, which is, you're not actually playing against an opponent, is what I'm gathering from your description.
You're playing against the house, basically.
Yeah. Well, it sort of works like a poker machine rather than a poker game.
Yeah. You're basically just like, yeah, each blind is like, you have, like, you have to score at least this amount of chips. So, like, you're basically just trying to hit a quota, more or less, with your hands.
Yeah. And, of course, you're gathering, and you're doing, like, a whole deck building thing to get there.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, like, effects that go on the cards and the jokers that, like, will either give you more multiplier or will give you more chips, or some of them will even, like, allow you to have more joker slots than the original 5 that you get. So you can do a lot of very wild, silly stuff with it.
Mm-hmm. You can play some real joker poker.
Real joker poker, indeed.
I wonder if they considered calling it that, but thought to go classier instead.
I don't know. I want to, like, I don't understand where the name comes from. I truly, like, don't know anything about poker. It's probably why it's taken me so long to, like, win a run is, like, I had to, like, have a cheat sheet of all of the different hands that you can play the whole time I was playing, because I was like, I don't know what the fuck that is. It'd be like, do a straight flush, and I was like, I don't know what the hell, like, what?
Oh, a Balatro is an ancient Roman jester.
Oh, okay.
So it is called Joker Poker,
but it is called Joker Poker, but fancy.
Yeah, classy.
Wow.
We ain't playing no Joker Poker. We're playing Balatro.
We're playing Balatro. But yeah, it rules. I like it. I play it like at night, usually after I finish like doing stuff for the day. And I'm just chasing that win, you know? I wanna get as many of these decks to the end as I can.
Yeah. Just gotta keep on fighting. You only need to win once. That's what they say in poker, right?
Yeah. Notoriously.
That's what all poker players say. You have to get lucky every time. You just gotta win once. But yeah.
Yeah,
is there more to say about Balatro?
I don't think so. It's just a really, like, if you like roguelike deck builders, this is it. Like, it's everything that you're gonna like about that style of game, because, like, it's a card game. Like, it's all built around an already built card game, and then just, like, doing all of the things that make that part of your brain go burr. I simply cannot recommend it enough if you're into that kind of game.
Half of my friends are already playing it. That's how effective it is. That's
it's like, the server that HB and I are both in has gone insane over this game.
Yeah. It's one of those games that sits in your brain.
It's just very, it just feels good. It's just one of those games that's like, it's like a video game, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you just start beeping and booping and bopping, and it's good.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's something we've already learned from Vampire Survivors, is that if you take the aesthetics of gambling and apply them for, like, something that doesn't actively prey on you, it's just going to take over you completely.
Yeah, it, like, I think I said in the Discord that this is this year's Vampire Survivors. Like, it is that level of, like, they're not the same gameplay-wise at all, but, like, just the fervor and, like, the feel-good must-play brain-go-burr of it, like, absolutely they are on a level.
Yeah. Because it's like if you could approach a poker slot machine with strategy.
Yeah.
Incredible. I love this entire strain of game design. Like, using gambling machine stuff for good.
Yeah, it's very good. I am a fan.
Yeah, maybe I should try it. I've been holding off. But maybe. Just maybe. But no, this one doesn't have a colon in the title. I gotta stay away.
It's true. What will you do without a colon?
Darkwood alone. Exhausted my ability to play something without at least one subtitle.
Yeah, you hit your limit for the month.
Yeah, but I will say that Darkwood is one of those games that I wasn't sure about, but also was, like, you know, very good. So maybe Balatro is something I gotta look into.
Yeah, I think you would enjoy it. I'm not gonna peer pressure you, but I think that you would enjoy it.
You're going to market me instead?
Well, to be fair to me, HB, I can't really, like, talk to you without it being, like, accidental marketing.
Yeah. Listen, that's on me for being very influenceable. I make all my consumption and purchasing decisions based on the person I talk to last.
And listen, I don't fault you for that, but I also can't be blamed.
Exactly. Play Balatro.
Play Balatro. But yeah, that's gonna do it for this time. HB, where can people find you and your stuff?
Well, you can't find me anywhere. I'm not real. But you can find the stuff that I make at gm36.itch.io. That's right, gm36.itch.io. Get it while it's hot and free. It'll always be free, but it won't always be hot, so get it now.
Gotta get those piping hot tabletop games before they cool on the windowsill.
Oh yeah, they're tabletop games. I should have said that as well.
I got you. Don't worry. And you can find me everything pretty much everywhere at Wolfkeeper, and you can find the show at Indie Mixtape Pod, and you should also follow the network that we are now on, Moonshot, which is Moonshot Pods. They be streaming pretty much, I think, like almost every day of the week now, on twitch.tv/moonshotpods, I think. I don't know. Ooh. Search them on Twitch, you'll find it.
Tasty.
And yeah, it's cool. They do lots of fun bananas stuff, and I think that's it. But we'll see you next time for more indie games.
See you next time.
All right. Goodbye.